comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host.
Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of This Month in Assistive Technology. This is Tech Chat 111 for July 28th, 2011. And again, we'll be talking about what happened this month in assistive technology, or technology in general, for that matter. Got two great guests with us tonight, one of whom is a returning guest. I guess we didn't scare her off the first time. She, among other things, is the co-host of Tech Access Weekly. It's Erin Edgar. Welcome back to the show, Erin.
Hello. No, it takes a lot to scare me off, so don't worry about it.
Good. We'll have to try harder then.
Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. Also joining us tonight is an incredible tech trainer, the host of the Creative Solutions podcast at lisasalinger.com. And if you haven't checked out her series on iDevices, you should definitely do that. It's Lisa Salinger. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, I'm very glad to be here.
It's great to have you. Well, alrighty then. We have a lot to cover this evening, so let's get right into it. You know, it's interesting. I was really pleased with myself as we were doing show planning, and I managed to snag the slot for this month in AT for July, because I was thinking, hey, it's convention season. You know, you can't, there's going to be more press releases than you can shake a stick at, and we can do like a two-part show and so on. And I'm not really sure that that happened so much this year, but I think there are some convention highlights, and I want to get your take on what the highlights were for each of you. We'll start with you, Erin.
Well, I think it's certainly true this year, especially I noticed that I didn't really hear a whole lot about conventions, when they were going on or, you know, afterwards. So it's interesting to me that usually, you know, you used to see a lot of technology, and I didn't see a lot of that, you know, in the reading about it. Really, the only things that I remember hearing about were the highlights that were on the previous tech chat 2 weeks ago from the NFB convention, when it had some people on there discussing a couple of NFB resolutions. And other than that, I don't really know much that went on. So it seems like to me the conventions are becoming more internal political affairs and less about technology, which is dealt with at ATIA and CSUN. That's just my take on it.
That's actually a very interesting take. Lisa, how about you? What were your highlights for this year?
Well, again, I didn't really find an awful lot. I listened to the demonstrations of Blio and of the Orion, but there just wasn't much. And I have a slightly different theory on this, and that is that from mid-July through early January, the various tech companies can work on whatever they're working on and they can develop their products. And they're really not having to account to anyone. So they've had this sort of mini sabbatical period. So January comes along and ATIA happens and they say, look, we have this and it's new and it's shiny. And the same thing for CSUN. And so by convention, there just isn't as much to show as there used to be. Also, the instant on, gotta have it now sort of culture of the internet really seems that when companies come out with something, they're issuing public releases as it's available. So I think that the most technology-rich experiences would have been had by people who actually went to the conventions and were able to put their hands on some of these new technologies, which, of course, doesn't really hold up if you're talking about an app so much, although Some of those are demonstrated, but for example, the Orion, the new camera by GW Micro, things like that. You know, people who went and could actually put their hands on these things would probably have considered it a richer technological experience than those of us at home reading tweets and press releases and listening to convention coverage.
That makes a lot of sense to me, and I did not go to either convention this year, which was a little unusual for me, so it was interesting to see things from the other side, I suppose. Usually I'm in a booth talking about what Saratech does, but there's still a little bit of time to walk around and maybe get my hands on some of the stuff, but that didn't happen for me this year either. I really enjoyed watching people live tweet from certain sessions at the convention or people sort of posting updates from there. I guess what I was a little surprised about was that there weren't more audio tweets and things like that from people who were on the floor. Now, certainly, Saratalk did cover both NFB and ACB in terms of getting interviews from vendors there, and you can actually listen to those on SAMNET Radio, and we'll be releasing those on the feeds in August. We had Derek Lane and Joe Steinkamp at NFB, and then Michael Loft did interviews at ACB. So you'll be able to hear those, but again, I kind of agree with you guys in that there wasn't a whole lot to talk about, at least in terms of new technology during the convention. Code Factory, though, was actually pretty busy. They were doing a whole lot of stuff, and they've kept it up this summer because just today they released a new version of MobileSpeak. But during the convention, they made the announcement that for Android, they were going to release the web browser as a standalone product, as well as a music player. And then, of course, they did some updates to mobile accessibility. Do either of you have thoughts on that? I know that all of us in this room typically use iDevices, but I'm not sure if either of you have Android devices as well.
I
don't have an Android device, but I sort of have thoughts on it in a sense that I understand why they did it that way. You know, we were thinking, well, this whole mobile accessibility suite is a great thing, and it is, and it puts all these things in one big bundle, and if you want it, I mean, you don't even have to go outside of the Code Factory suite of products to do really much of anything on the Android and use other programs if you don't want to. But I do know of a lot of people who have real difficulty with accessibility speaking with some of the web browsers and some of the music players that are out there for the Android market. And so this was a way for Code Factory to help those people and make them happy, you know, so that they can still use the other programs that they have, you know, that they have, that they're used to using for email and other activities. One of the problems with Android is that it's such a fragmented market that it's hard to provide for accessibility in any kind of another way. I mean, Code Factory has a whole like closed way of doing things, and it's hard to get any kind of integration between everything. I don't know, that doesn't make much sense, but you know, if you're not using Code Factory's products, there's no guarantee of what you're going to get on the Android from an accessibility perspective.
Right, and of course, you are kind of at the whim of the carriers, the handset manufacturer, and so on, as to which version of Android you're going to get. And there are some people who are still back on 2.1 and some on 2.2 and 2.3. I can imagine that must have been a really interesting beta cycle for the Code Factory folks.
Because the Code Factory products don't work with anything below a certain version number. And I can't remember what that is. I believe it's 2.2. But I can't be positive about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. I wanted to say that they did work on 2.1, or at least partly. I think it was, you know, buyer beware if you're on 2.1. It may somewhat work, but you may be missing some things. Code Factory also released something called TV Speak, which is, and I just got informed that no, 2.1 and below is not supported at all with the Code Factory products on Android. So that's good to know. But again, they also released something called TV Speak in the USA. This was previously available in the UK and is now here. The interesting thing about it, though, is that it is you aren't able to get feedback if you're getting, you know, stations through cable. You actually have to be able to pick up these stations over the air, so you're sort of limited to what stations you can pick up locally. And as I heard about this, I was thinking, you know, I don't know that this would be at all useful to me. I might have two or three stations that I could get information about, but perhaps that's different for other people. Do either of you have any thoughts on TV Speak?
Well, that was my first thought. If you don't live in a major metropolitan area, you would sort of be out of luck. Where I live, it's fairly rural, and for example, there's one cable company, and I think without that cable company, I wouldn't get any stations at all, so that would be limiting, but for people who can use it, I think it has great potential.
I haven't, you know, tried it, or I haven't even really heard of anyone who has taken advantage of it, so I don't know, you know, what the experience is like, but I can't really see where it'd be very useful to me personally either. And, you know, I mean, we get a few stations here. I live in a fairly major city, but I don't know that I don't see much of a point of it if I can't really access my cable channels and do, you know, and find programming in that way. I don't see much of a point of it if I'm limited to local programming.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to see something like this where you could get information about your cable stations. That would be fantastic because you could have a TV tuner card and you could do all of the things like sort of a do-it-yourself DVR where you're able to record shows and program things and all that happy fun stuff and get information that the station is displaying about various programming. But we're not quite there yet. Another interesting release during the convention, and this one was announced, and people, at least from my perspective, were retweeting the announcement and so on, but for whatever reason, there wasn't a whole lot of actual discussion about it, and that is the update to the HIMS BookSense player that allows for speech recognition. Do either of you own a BookSense?
I don't.
I don't. I did purchase one for a client when I worked as a rehabilitation teacher because he needed specific features that it contained, but that was the BookSense and not the BookSense XT. And my understanding is that this is only for the XT.
Right. So you're...
It's a free upgrade, but you have to have the XT.
Yeah, so you pay a bit of a premium. I mean, granted, you do get other features like the FM radio and internal flash memory and so on, but it will only work on the XT. What do you guys think about having a voice-activated book player of any kind? Would you personally find it useful, and what situations can you see this being a really nice to have?
I guess I can see this. If you're, like, listening to podcasts or something and you just got it and you're doing a task, you know, while you're listening to it and you've got your hands busy and you can't press buttons, you know, to tell it to make it do things, but you can, you know, raise your voice slightly and tell it to do things from across the room if you've got your hands busy, you know, and it can go to the next book or a podcast or whatever. I tend to find voice-activated devices, I tend to think of them as lazy methods, and I tend not to like them, but that's a personal preference. From what I understand, it recognizes over 100 commands and does a pretty good job. So, you know, if it's something that you can think of that you'd want to use and you know that you're a very busy person and it's one less thing you have to hold and keep track of, then I guess it could be useful.
I'm a great one for multitasking, and so I'll clip my reader on to me. And, you know, if you're in the middle of cooking dinner or something, you know, where your hands are busy and you want to stop playback or go back a little bit. But the main context that I thought of this in was that this would really help people with multiple disabilities or disabilities that were not visual in nature. Because people who cannot, for example, who cannot hold books or turn pages are also eligible for library services. So in my mind, this was a very good, very strategic and inclusive move on the part of HIMSS because, for example, someone with MS or CP could, if their speech was clear enough to do so, could use the voice commands.
That's true. It'll be interesting to see if they market it in that way. In that all-inclusive way, how their if their marketing strategy will change to encompass that. And as far as I don't know, I mean, I don't know if they're planning to market it towards, you know, those with multiple disabilities or those with disabilities other than vision. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And perhaps they have done some marketing in those areas, although I haven't really seen anything myself. But I suppose at times we're sort of attuned to what's happening in our community, and there may be things that we don't see. This could perhaps be, you know, this may have made a huge splash in other communities that for whatever reason we're not necessarily seeing feedback on. What I'd like to see is somebody who owns like a talking parrot or cockatiel or something, and it learns to go, book sense, next book. That would work. There was another release that, again, for whatever reason, I didn't see much about it. I saw the initial release, and I didn't see a lot of people talking about it, and that is the Read It wand from GW Micro. And if I understand correctly, this is targeted more toward the low vision audience than a totally blind audience, but it seems like a very nifty idea to have this handheld device that you can move across documents and do OCR and have it speak out loud, as well as being able to actually magnify an image as you move across it. Have either of you heard much about this device other than it exists?
I haven't. I tried to ask Rodney to describe it to me because I was a little confused about what it did. But I think not only can it be used to move around documents, it could be used to like hook to like an arm or a stand so that it can take pictures of the computer screen. Is my understanding as well. So that is kind of clever. And it does, you know, helps with the magnification and contrast and things. So it is primarily for low vision. But it does have speech output, which makes it nice for, you know, for those with vision and those with no vision. I have no idea if it's going to take off or not, and I haven't heard of anyone who actually has tried it.
No, same here. I mean, I don't remember hearing about anyone who mentioned seeing it at convention. It was kind of, the release was, it felt like it was sort of in a vacuum. I mean, there was the release and there was nothing else. There was no discussion. There was no buzz. I don't know.
Yeah, and it happened at sort of an interesting time because I think it was right between the NFB and ACB conventions, or it may have been announced on the first day of ACB convention or something like that, but it was just sort of released and then not a whole lot more was said about it. I saw more people talking about things like the Orion note taker, and of course HumanWare had a press release about the new Brilliance that are forthcoming. I'm kind of curious about the Orion. I remember there was a bit of a kerfuffle, I guess, about the price of it, because it, from what I understood, it was announced somewhere that it was going to be below $4,000, and then, of course, the speculation began about, well, just how much below? Is it going to be $3,995, or is it going to be considerably below? And we still don't know, I think, but its feature set definitely looks interesting for a note-taking device. I mean, there's a camera and all sorts of stuff that you don't see in any other device, but it's also it's going to take more than pocket change, I think, to purchase it. What do you guys think about the Orion?
I agree. I think it's a little pricier than I would have anticipated, especially since it's only an 18-cell display, I believe. It's a little pricey. I mean, big feature set, but still a little high price-wise. And somehow, I don't see myself using the cell phone on the device. It seems like it would be a little bit hard to use as a cell phone. I don't really understand that.
I was thinking that, too.
I haven't actually felt a unit, but my thought is, 18-cell Braille display isn't a small piece of machinery. You know,
no.
So,
you don't want to be holding that thing up to your head.
I know.
Yeah. My concern, and I'm sure it's, you know, a great product, and like was said, there are tons of features, but to me, technologically, that is putting an awful lot of eggs in one basket. Because if it breaks, there goes your access to your Braille display. There goes your access to any kind of PDA capability. There goes your access to your cell phone. I'm glad, for example, for an iPhone that does so many things. But I can also back it up and sync it with other things. I think we still need that sort of modular technology. You know, even if there's some overlap, but to spend that kind of money on a, for lack of a better word, a be-all and end-all, for that to break, you're in serious trouble, because then what do you use? You know, if you've invested all your money. And the iPhone does more, really, than I ever anticipated that a phone would. But if it broke, you know, I could go to my local store or send it off and in under a week have it replaced, repaired, and back, and I have other things that I could use in the interim. So, to me, it seems risky from that standpoint.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, I mean, we're living in a time technologically where the concept of a note taker, at least in my mind, is a bit outdated. I really like the idea of having something that is instant on, but there are so many off-the-shelf pieces of technology that you can put together, and you can enhance these things with the apps that you install. And as you said, Lisa, if your iPhone breaks, you can still use your Braille display with your computer until it comes back. And so I don't know. I don't know how big a market there is for this. I think only time will tell, but I feel like more people than ever before are really looking at mainstream technology as an alternative to something that's specialized, and to me, that's a good thing.
Yeah, the fascination factor is definitely there. I mean, I too would love to see one. I'd love to play with it and see what it's like and how it would really feel to hold 18 cells up to my head. But as far as the actual saleability, I feel like I'm coining new words every time I open my mouth tonight. But as far as the actual saleability, I think really only time will tell.
Yeah, precisely. It's interesting that it is going to run Android, and I think, you know, I don't know how that will all go down. I mean, Android software and things are still pretty relatively new. So we'll have to see how, I don't know, buggy it is. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. You know, how many little bugs they've got in it and whether it can do all that it's cracked up to do. and how much of a demand there is for it, because it's just, I understand that people don't want seven different devices, but there comes a point when you need multiple devices, and I think they're trying to cram too many, as Lisa said, too many into one.
Yeah, and you actually brought up an interesting point about it running on Android, and the reason that's interesting to me is, yes, Android is relatively new, all things considered, but then, of course, there is the Chrome OS as well, and what's going to happen to these two operating systems? Are they going to merge at some point? Is Android going to be dropped? Is Chrome going to become much more prevalent than it is at this point? Nobody really knows, and it's interesting to it's going to be interesting to see which one wins out.
Yeah, my thought was that Android was for phones, mobile devices, and Chrome OS was for, you know, computers. But then with the advent of tablets, then, you know, you're right. It can start to get
exactly.
A little blurry.
Yeah, the lines are blurring all over the place, really.
Well, that's pretty much all I really remember about what came out of convention. Although we did have an excellent tech chat where Daryl Shandro and Steve Sazen were guests, and we also had Jim Gashel from Blio who came on to talk about.
Yes,
yes, it was. Yeah. There were that will go down in tech chat history.
I'm sorry, Ricky, Lisa, I interrupted
you
there.
Something?
I apologize.
No,
I think I was just sort of thinking out loud. Yeah, Lively says it all, I think.
Yeah, if you guys haven't checked out that particular tech chat, it's definitely worth a listen. Not only were convention highlights covered, but there was, we'll stick with the term lively, a very lively discussion between Daryl Shandro and Jim Gashel about Blio, among other things, including the response to a couple of resolutions that were put forth during the NFB, one of which was to basically demand that Apple make it a requirement that each of the apps in the App Store, where possible, meaning not something that was clearly visually oriented, but that all of these apps be required to pass accessibility testing before Apple would allow that app through. And I'm not going to give a whole lot of spoiler alerts about the discussion which took place. You guys can go listen to that if you haven't already. But do either of you have any thoughts about those two resolutions?
I do, and that was the one that passed. I think one passed and one did not, and I think that
yes.
was the one that passed. And
right.
That resolution, I mean, it's great. I mean, you know, everyone should. It's wonderful that people are. You know, it's accessibility is a concern for most apps, but there are lots of apps that are being submitted to the App Store. You know, and I don't think it's realistic, unless Apple employs people to do this as a full-time job. I don't think it's realistic to expect Apple to sift through each app, or almost every app, and make sure that they follow the guidelines to the letter. I'm not sure how realistic it is. And I mean, maybe there's more to the resolution than I know of, but just simply from what I've heard about it, I'm not sure that it can be done.
No, and define accessibility.
Right. And accessibility for whom? And to what extent? Because, you know, I could find something accessible that you might not understand how it would work, and vice versa. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think you get a group of people in a room, and it would be difficult even among those people to come to a consensus about what accessibility is. And not only that, but if you're doing this sort of thing, if you're demanding that developers make something accessible, assuming that you can define that, you're still probably going to miss a segment of the population. And if a developer doesn't understand the why of accessibility, why am I doing this besides that it's being mandated, I don't think they would be as receptive if a segment of the population were left out and that segment needed to advocate for itself and say, this isn't accessible for me. You know, developers would probably be well within their rights to say,
well, I did what I was supposed to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. We met Apple's guidelines.
So. Yeah, exactly. So.
And it takes a lot of careful planning when attempting to make something accessible to make sure that you don't leave a group out. I mean, immediately I think of, okay, you know, you have blind people. You have deaf people in some of the audio programs. You have people who are not able to effectively tap on the images on the screen to manipulate them. And I just think that it's without a definition of accessibility. I mean, I think, you know, we're at these blind conventions and we're kind of in these little insular worlds. And so, of course, we think, well, accessible for the blind. Who else? But it is a bigger world out there. And unfortunately, not all apps can be made accessible to us. I think of games that just by their nature could never be accessible, or photo editing software. I mean, it would be very difficult. And I think when you start restricting creativity in that way, you'd restrict the number of available apps, and you restrict our chance as individuals to educate the developers and say, you know, this is what would make it accessible. How many apps, if that were put in place by Apple, how many apps would never get written because developers would just throw up their hands and say, I just can't do this?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And how many developers would be willing to listen to people who, you know, who say, I mean, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, who say, well, I can't figure out how this works. Could you please help? And they say, well, we followed our guidelines. We did what we're supposed to do. We don't have to do any more to help you.
Right.
So, you know, I think it really does restrict innovation. And so what if you can't include everybody right from the outset when the app launches? If it's something you want, then you contact the developer and say, I'd like to be included, and here's what I need.
And I think that's a great skill to need to acquire. I think that it's been very educational and perhaps a growth experience, at least for me, learning to advocate for myself in that way and opening up dialogues with developers. And sometimes it doesn't work well, and sometimes it's very successful. And to be able to have a dialogue which begins with, you know, what technically needs to happen to make this accessible can really turn into an educational opportunity in general, where you can sort of teach the developers what things are like from your perspective and teach them that there is, in fact, a market among the blind population, and you can learn a lot from developers as well. I mean, I think it's fascinating to hear what goes into developing an app, and it's always a good feeling when something good comes from that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was great. I was playing with a Downcast, which is a podcast app for the iPhone, and Rodney happened to have a video podcast on his iPhone, and he was playing with it and turned VoiceOver on and happened to notice that the controls didn't stay on the screen long enough for a person with VoiceOver to interact with it. So we didn't make a firm decision on who was going to do it, but he was the one who ended up emailing the developer and saying, you know, we would like help with this. And within 3 or 4 days, I mean, the guy was just wonderful and receptive, and it was fixed. And he said, I wouldn't have known about it unless somebody hadn't told me, you know. So,
and I think communities.
Sometimes the developers won't be. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I jumped in there on the end of your sentence. Please Please finish if you didn't lose it completely.
All I was going to say was repeat what Ricky had said, which is sometimes developers might not be receptive, but other times they will, and it's just getting up the nerve to take that chance.
Yeah, and I have, over the last few years, just recently gotten into contacting more developers or webmasters, and it's very much a learning process. I mean, places like Twitter or even email lists are great because you can try a new app or you can go to this website and you can say, you know, has anyone else noticed difficulties with accessibility or name the feature, or is it just me? And you may find that everyone's having trouble, or you may find that it is just you, you know, and that you need to, for example, on the iPhone, tap on a button in the center that unfortunately is just labeled button, and once you get past that for the first time, you'll never see it again, and everything else works well. So if someone's timid, there's certainly a lot of support out there and other people who will either agree that there's a problem or show you how to very easily get around it.
Yeah, and that's a great experience, absolutely. Just getting feedback from your own community, and sometimes you can learn to use your device better. You may have a question about something and you may be thinking that it's inaccessible, and somebody gives you a tip that works not only in a particular app, but maybe something that you can actually use every day, you know, and other things as well. But in any case, we started, somewhat anyway, talking about Blio, or at least we made a reference to it, but we never actually got to the point where we talked about the app itself. Have either or both of you played with Blio?
I have, both on the iPhone and on the computer. I had a student who was possibly interested in using it, and I was not terribly impressed. I found that it felt like accessibility was retrofitted over top of it, and that it really was not even the second thought. It felt like it was an afterthought. And I just found it very clunky. If I had one option or the other, I would use it on the PC and not on the iPhone, primarily because at least on the PC, you can set it to read continuously. On the iPhone, you have to flick down for every page. And yes, as was suggested on that tech chat, setting the font size smaller does help. But, you know, still, if your hands are full or you just want to listen to a book and you're, I mean, maybe that sounds lazy, but like, you know, you're caught up in the moment, you don't want to turn the page. But, you know, if your hands are full, you know, you can't get it to just read automatically. I just found the whole thing to be kind of unwieldy, and I found that I could get the books that I wanted through other sources, often more economically.
I would agree with the whole unwieldy thing. I found the whole process, it wasn't very intuitive to me. It was just, and I find, you know, something like iBooks or something like that a lot easier to understand and to grasp. And I find really, like you just said, Lisa, I can get my books from other sources, and, you know, Blio doesn't have anything really that attracts me to it, whether it be the user interface or, you know, the books that are available.
Yeah.
As of now, I really...
And just for kicks, I priced 5 books on Blio and 5 books on iBooks and 5, you know, the same 5 on iBooks and then the same 5 through the Amazon Kindle store. And I found that in all cases, and sometimes it was only by a few pennies, but that the Blio bookstore, the books were more expensive than anywhere else.
I definitely agree with you guys that it feels unwieldy. I did a review on the, well, it wasn't exactly a review, it was more sort of a walkthrough on a Serotalk podcast, and it felt very unwieldy, but I have an interesting question, I suppose, in that one of the things that I very much didn't like for a book that hadn't been enabled with text-to-speech was that you had to manually turn the page. And I'm doing some philosophical wrestling with myself because as a sighted person who uses, you know, a sighted person who uses a book reader does have to press that button or make that gesture to turn the page. And, you know, at what point do we say, okay, that's not really a design flaw, it really does mimic the mainstream? And at what point do we say, hey, I don't care, I'm accustomed to not having to think about this, and I still want that functionality?
I would think that it could be, and I don't know, I'm not a developer, so I can come up with these fantastic ideas that have no bearing in reality, but I would think that in theory they could customize the app to do either way. But it just seems, if this is marketed for blind people, you know, because it seems that it has, at least to some extent, been marketed toward blind people, that there would have been possibly more forethought put into this issue and the option to have it either way. You know, and make it more like an audiobook.
I've always wondered if, as a sighted person, you know how on something like the Braille Note, you can set the scrolling speed of the Braille display so that you don't have to press a button to go to the next line. I wonder why that sort of thing hasn't been explored for the sighted population as well. Might it be very useful to be able to set a page scrolling speed so that they can sit there with the thing in front of their face and have a sandwich in one hand and a drink in the other and still be able to read the book without having to lift a finger?
I think so, and I'm real surprised that you don't see more of that, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Well, I think if there's really any theme for this month, it is books. There seem to be a lot of things, sort of a lot of releases of having to do with books. I don't think that made much sense, but there is, for example, the Read to Go app from Bookshare, and I have played with this to some extent. I was definitely excited when it came out, and I think it's going to be a useful tool in my arsenal. How about the two of you? Have you played with it, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't have a Bookshare account, so I haven't played with it. I haven't purchased it because I don't have a Bookshare account and I'm not planning to get one. And I don't seem, at this point, to have much of a need for it. But having said that, I've heard a lot of reviews from people who have purchased it and say it's fantastic and wonderful and they love it. So I'm sure it's impressive. I know a lot of work went into it and it's been in the works for a long time.
I have it, and I like it very much. I was temporarily very disappointed because I went into settings to adjust the speed. You know, I grew up in the variable speed generation and jokingly say that I went to college with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, but I need this speed. And so I went into the speed settings, and it said that speed was at 100%. And I thought, no, you're joking. You mean I'm going to have to listen at that speed for the rest of my life, because in my absolute little world, 100% meant as fast as you could go. And
yep.
Boy, was I happy when I experimented a little bit and said, oh, we can go up to 260%. Life is very good. I really do like it, and I like the fact that they it seems that Bookshare, Benetech, is very open to suggestions, to bug fixes, that they are actively working on it. They're not just sitting there kind of resting on their laurels. I like that you can download the books to your phone, which is great because it hasn't happened yet, but when I go out, I have this hidden something, obsession, fear that somehow, some way I will run out of books. And this just does good things for my soul because, you know, I can download and I can, you know, not be without books. I think it's the days of having to wait for the Braille books to come in the mail that, you know, scarred me for life. But I love I love the app. I think it's gotten a great start and it has great potential.
Yeah, I have played with this as well, and really my only complaint, I've seen some people who talk about an out-of-memory error, and I haven't seen this on my particular device. My only complaint is that I love the a cappella voices, but there seems to be, at least to me, an inordinately long pause at the end if you're encountering a blank line. And I did report that, and I'm happy to say that the Bookshare folks on Twitter, at least, are definitely monitoring, you know, these tweets that people are sending out and saying, great suggestion, we'll look into that. I think that you're right, Lisa, they're not just saying, okay, we did that, we don't really have to think about this anymore. And yeah, I'm glad to be able to download a book when out and about. No bookpocalypse anymore. I won't ever be stuck without
bookpocalypse. That's the best apocalypse I've heard. Or the worst, depending.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that out-of-memory error was, for what it's worth, I think that's when opening a really large book, because I tried to open, or I did open that book just coincidentally about a week previous on a note taker. I opened it in a Braille file, and it was over a meg, so it was pretty large. And they said that they were aware of problems with very large books and that it should be resolved shortly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So how about the new page, speaking of books, that searches all of these various entities for whatever textbook you're looking for? It searches NLS and Bookshare, Learning Ally, CourseSmart, and a few other things, something from Media Access, I think. Have either of you had occasion to look at this? I haven't had a need to download any textbooks lately, but I love the idea of this.
I've looked at it. I'm not, you know, a student or in education. Lisa can probably speak to it more than I can, but I looked at it. It was very usable and accessible, and it seemed to cover a lot of different publishers and, you know, categories of books, so I was pretty impressed with it.
Yes, and the general impression I got was that you could search for educational materials, but you could search for other books, which is really nice. And the other thing, too, was the topic of this website came up on Twitter, and Michael McCarty from the Fred's Head blog posted something to the effect of, you know, you can also find a fair number of books and where they're located through their Lewis database, through American Printing House's Lewis database. And I would think that between this site and Lewis, you would just about have every conceivable source covered. It certainly beats doing, you know, 10 or so searches, especially because sometimes there are smaller or lesser known sites that are producing books that when you're searching, you might not think of that site. Sometimes a book can show up in an unlikely place.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, you, Lisa, mentioned, I think, having some experience with one of the resources that this searches, CourseSmart, which is associated with STEP, where there are about 20,000 textbooks in ebook format, and you can get them They are fully accessible. At least that is what's advertised. And, of course, it's a lot cheaper than having to buy the giant paper book and scan it and then sell it back at the end of the semester. Did you have some experience with this?
I've read about it and researched it and listened to demos. I haven't actually needed particular books, although I do know that I don't know how long it's in effect, but I know that CourseSmart has, you can download a free sample, I believe, a book of your choice, and you can read it on the computer or on the iPhone, so it seems that there are various ways to do that and to take it with you. Like I said, I haven't actually accessed any of their books, but I guess it's the feeling of once a student, always a student. I certainly took a look around and looked for books in particular areas. If my understanding is correct, I also have heard that if there's a book that you need for a class, if you contact them in enough time, they will consider adding it.
That's always a good thing, because it's never good to be stuck in the midst of the semester is about to begin and you have no way to get your books.
Or the semester is half over and you still have
Yes.
books.
Yes.
Yeah. Not good.
No.
Well, there are a couple of other book resources that you guys can find in the show notes, like talking about how CourseSmart uses HTML5 for their e-textbooks, and that is certainly a good thing because it's cross-platform and it is accessible. There's also a list of 87 different audiobook, or it's 87 different sites where you can get audiobooks. So if you're afraid of the bookpocalypse, this is definitely something to check out. And these aren't just public domain books, and they aren't restricted to any particular genre either. So check those out in the show notes. But enough of books for the moment, I suppose. We just learned this summer, right around convention time actually, that NV Access, the guys who make NVDA, received a grant from Mozilla in order to be able to continue development of NVDA. What do you guys think about that?
I was very glad that that happened. I actually saw it happening. I mean, I predicted that it would happen because NVDA and the non-visual NV Access and Mozilla have had a working partnership for a few years, and they work closely together. I guess because it's sort of the whole open source concept is kind of what they're both based on. But I was very glad that it actually happened because they really needed money to continue. They only had enough money to go through July, and then they were going to stop developing altogether. And so I was very glad to see this go on. I know that they're still looking for funding, and you know, I don't know how long this money will last them, but I still think it, I mean, I think it means good things for the future of NVDA, at least for the short term.
Yes, absolutely.
I would agree.
And incidentally, the new release candidate for 2011.2 is out.
Ah, very good. Well, off the subject of technology for a bit, unless there are robotic guide dogs that I don't know about yet, that'd be pretty cool. The National Association of Guide Dog Users, NAGDU, I guess is how you pronounce that, has just launched a hotline where you can call and get advice on all sorts of things related to, you know, things that tend to come up as a guide dog owner. Do either of you have thoughts on that?
I think it's a good thing because you have individuals sometimes who live in isolated areas and they may be the only guide dog user for 50 or 100 miles around, and it's good for them to be able to hook into that support. just for what it's worth, now NAGDU is the NFB guide dog affiliate, and GDUI, who is the ACB affiliate, also has a similar setup. But I think it's excellent because the more support that we can have and the more advocacy that we can have, the more that we can help guide dog users to advocate for themselves, the better.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, how are these hotlines staffed? Is it sort of like a graduate council like you get with certain schools where you have representatives who are guide dog owners themselves who staff the hotline, or do we know?
I can't speak to how NAGDU's is staffed. I can to how GDUI's is staffed. And NAGDU's may be similar. When you call GDUI's number, you basically get a phone tree, a menu of choices, and you can call, press 1 or say the person's name or the committee name, and you can be connected with various GDUI officers. Then there is an advocacy committee. So, you know, if you have an advocacy issue, you can say advocacy, and you'll be connected to the chair of the advocacy committee. The other thing, at least that GDUI has, is empathizers, and they are people who, it's just someone to talk to if you're going through the process of retiring or euthanizing a dog. And we used to just have one, and now we have empathizers in the different time zones of the U.S. so that you're more likely to get a person in at a time that's convenient for both of you.
Well, that's definitely useful.
That's
because, yeah, I mean, like, before this launched, you were sort of restricted to either knowing other people who were guide dog users, or you had the school that you could contact. And of course, you're looking at you know, certain hours, and the school has all sorts of other things to do as well. Their primary purpose isn't necessarily to do follow-up work in terms of advocacy and so on. That's not to say that they don't do it. It's just that they do any number of other things as well. And so I think it's great to have something that is exclusively dedicated to those sorts of things. And, you know, earlier in the show, I was joking about we could do a two-part show and all this stuff, and it actually looks like we could have, because there were a lot of things that we weren't able to cover this evening. But it's from my perspective, been a fantastic chat, and we are unfortunately nearing the end of this. I'd love to stay here all night because there are so many interesting things to discuss, and both of you have great perspectives on things. But that just means we're going to have to do this again sometime.
Yay!
So
excellent.
If we didn't scare Erin off again. She wants to come back. And Lisa, I hope we didn't scare you off either.
I'm still sitting in my chair. I'm not in my crate in the dog's crate with her, so I think it's safe to say I'm
good
to go. Yes.
Well, I want to give each of you a chance to share any final thoughts that you have with the listeners. So we'll start with you, Erin. Any final thoughts you want to wrap it up with?
Start with me first. Well, I'm very happy to be back here, and it's always good to look back in the month, you know, to see what went on, and this gives me an opportunity to kind of do a lot of look back. I'm really sort of still surprised and disappointed about the fact that the convention coverage just seemed really disorganized this year. And like I said, it seems to be part of a trend. I hope it kind of gets more organized, because I feel like I'm not a member of either organization, but I like to know what they do. And I feel like a convention time is a good way to find that out, but it seems like I'm not really finding that out this year. But in any event, if you'd like my contact information, the podcast my husband Rodney and I have is called Tech Access Weekly. You can get to it by going to techaccessweekly.com. And we also have a daily tips feed where we put up daily tips, and you can access those on the same website too. or email us at techaccessweekly@gmail.com.
All right, and Lisa, how about you?
You know, I think I had looked at these stories beforehand and, you know, came kind of ready to discuss stuff, to say stuff. And I think, kind of to my surprise, I learned, and that is, I learned really how important community is. Because I looked at these stories and I thought, oh man, slow month, folks, you know. And then we got discussing these technologies and the philosophies behind them. And really, that's what makes the technologies pop or makes them sparkle, kind of, is develop or discussing them and analyzing them in community. It really sheds a whole new light. I can't tell you how many times I looked over the list, and maybe I shouldn't admit this, but it took Ricky mentioning it to go, oh, yeah, a lot of these really are about books. A little slow on the uptake there, I guess, but I think it just really stresses the importance of community, that, you know, we can pick up on things that maybe someone else has missed completely, and just hearing another philosophy, another viewpoint is excellent. If you'd like, you're welcome to contact me or check out my podcast. I've done primarily iPhone things. I'm going to be doing some other various general computer-related stuff. If you're one of those people that says, if I hear one more thing about iPhone, I'm going to scream. So please do feel free to check out my website. It is www.lisasalinger, and it's LISASALINGER, and those are both S's and Sam, SALINGER.com.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me again. We're definitely going to have to do a repeat of this. Just a couple of quick announcements before we wrap up. As we typically do, it is time for the summer break where we all go and frolic on the beach and don't do these for a while. Actually, we'll still be here. At least I will. I can't speak for everybody. But the Saratok Tech Chats will be on hiatus just for a bit for a summer break. We will be coming back on September 8th with all sorts of happy new content and a new name as well. So stay tuned to the Saratok Twitter feed and to the Saratok podcast for more information on said name. And with that, we are all going to be in the tech room on SamNet right after we wrap up here. So definitely come and join us for more discussion if you have a SamNet account. And if you don't, what better time to go and get a trial at www.sa2go.com. So that's going to put the wraps on Tech Chat 111. Hey, there are lots of ones in that. That's actually kind of apropos because we are all number one, are we not? Yay, three people, all number one. So let's put the wraps on this. And until next time, stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Saratok Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Saratech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.